Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Indian conglomerate Adani has lost more than $100 billion in market value in 1 week.
The Adani Group has really kind of presented itself as kind of the champion of India's growth. And India's growth is Adani, and Adani's growth is India's growth from an economic perspective.
What caused the slide and whether it could spread? Plus, how the current economic outlook is impacting big tech companies. And the heated debate on gas versus electric stoves continues. But what does the science say? It's Thursday, February 2nd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The Nasdaq jumped more than 3% today ahead of a slew of after-the-bell earnings from big tech companies. But the busiest week of earnings season brought mixed news. Apple reported its first quarterly revenue decline in nearly 4 years, with revenue of more than $117 billion in the fourth quarter, down 5% from the same quarter a year ago. The company struggled to keep up with demand for its newest iPhones in the final quarter of 2022 due to manufacturing disruptions in China from COVID-19 lockdowns. Analysts expect production to rise, though, as China loosened restrictions late last year. There was mixed earnings news from Amazon, which reported fourth quarter revenue of $149 billion, up 9% from the same quarter in 2021 and beating expectations. However, revenue from direct e-commerce fell 2% year over year as consumers pulled back amid concerns over a possible recession. That decline was offset by growth in Amazon's other businesses, including AWS Cloud, subscription services, advertising, and credit cards. And a big drop in ad spending weighed on results from Google parent Alphabet. The company reported a 3.6% decrease in advertising revenue for the fourth quarter compared to the same period in 2021. For more analysis of big tech earnings, check back with our show tomorrow morning. The European Central Bank and the Bank of England each raised their key interest rates by 0.5 percentage point today, following the U.S. Federal Reserve's decision to hike rates 0.25% yesterday. The ECB is signaling another hike of the same size next month, while the Bank of England signaled it could soon pause further increases. The divergent outlooks reflect economic uncertainty and a staggered reopening from the pandemic. Meanwhile, despite statements to the contrary, some investors are betting the world's major central banks will soon pause rate hikes and even start to cut rates later this year. Pressure is mounting on TikTok, the Chinese-owned video platform. Today, Democratic Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado joined several Republicans in seeking to ban the video streaming app from popular U.S. app stores, calling it a national security risk in a letter to Apple and Google. But ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok, has already begun a so-called transparency campaign to ease calls for regulation. The campaign includes a plan to silo off TikTok's U.S. operations and have third parties monitor them. Plus, TikTok built a new transparency and accountability center near Los Angeles, where it hosted journalists this week, including The Wall Street Journal's Georgia Wells.
It felt like a museum exhibit or like the visitor center for a national park or some other kind of curated display you might visit. So it was a way to learn more about TikTok in a way that the company wanted to teach people about its role in the world. But meanwhile, we've got some bills to ban TikTok kind of winding their way through Congress. When lawmakers are concerned about TikTok's roots in China, they often don't have very specific concerns, but if the Chinese government wanted information or wanted ByteDance to influence what appears on TikTok, I think that the company would be in a really tough position.
TikTok is building more transparency and accountability centers in some of its other offices, including in Washington, D.C., Dublin, and Singapore. Representative Ilhan Omar was removed from the House Foreign Affairs Committee today in a vote of 218 to 211 along party lines. House Republicans pointed to statements made by Omar that were labeled as anti-Semitic, as well as her criticisms of the Israeli government. Omar has apologized for her comments. In a speech on the House floor, she accused Republicans of trying to silence a dissenting voice that had been critical of U.S. foreign policy. Omar is also the third Democrat ousted from a committee by Republicans, sparking allegations that the GOP is retaliating for the previous Congress, in which Democrats removed two Republicans from committees. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy denies the allegations. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is urging people to stop using EzraCare artificial tears, believing the product could be responsible for at least 55 infections and at least one death. The CDC says infections were caused by a bacterium that's highly resistant to antibiotics and that was found in open bottles of the non-prescription eye drops in two states. EzraCare says there is no definitive evidence linking the outbreak to their eye drops. Coming up, why shares from Indian conglomerate Adani are still falling and what could come next. That's after the break.
Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune in to the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Each week, we bring you stock market outlooks, macroeconomic updates, and investment strategies that can help you succeed. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience about how they navigate uncertain markets. Prepare to be engaged, enlightened, and entertained by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
Some of our listeners may not have heard much about the Adani Group before this week. The massive Indian conglomerate was founded by Gautam Adani, one of the richest people in the world. It includes seven publicly traded companies with firms in green energy, power transmission, and other infrastructure businesses. And in less than a week, Adani has lost about $100 billion in market value after short-selling activist firm Hindenburg Research accused the company of fraud in a report late last month. In a surprising reversal, the company also just this week abandoned a share sale plan that was meant to raise an additional $2.5 billion from investors. So what's the state of Adani's business now? And what are the broader implications for India's financial system? Joining me now is Wall Street Journal financial investigative reporter Ben Foldy, who's also host of the latest season of our Bad Bets podcast. Hi, Ben. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with this short sellers report, which precipitated the drop we're now seeing in Adani's shares. What did Hindenburg specifically allege here, and what's happened over the past few days at Adani as a result?
Yeah, so Hindenburg's report, their research report, had kind of a bunch of allegations. I would say that the main allegation is that a number of kind of offshore entities, shell company type organizations were used for a few things to kind of allegedly manipulate Adani's stock price. One is to hold stock so that the companies weren't delisted by having too much of their shares owned by the family or its kind of related parties. And another was that they would actually lend money between them and into the Adani companies, the private ones, and not disclose those as related party transactions. You know, on top of that, there were allegations that the company was kind of extremely leveraged, you know, was pledging shares, things like that. You know, according to Hindenburg, Adani was kind of this big, incredibly overvalued house of cards that only needed kind of a couple things to go wrong to really kind of come crumbling. And given the impact of the short report, it seems like, you know, at least the initial indications are that some of that was probably true, because once the wind turned on Adani, it wasn't just, you know, like a 5% day. It's been like several tens of percents per day.
What have we heard from Adani? They did issue a rebuttal to these allegations, also questioning Hindenburg's motives. What can you tell us about how they've responded to all of this?
For the specific allegations that Hindenburg raised, Adani addressed some of them, but said for a lot of things like, oh, that was disclosed. Oh, we don't have an obligation to disclose that as a related party transaction. We don't have an obligation to know who the owners of these entities are or where their money comes from. I think the main note that they struck was almost kind of a nationalist one, in saying that this is an attack by an outsider. They referred to Hindenburg as the Madoffs of Manhattan, which didn't totally make a ton of sense. The short report was kind of an attack on India and on India's kind of growth story and market, which I think is a reflection of the fact that, you know, the Adani Group has really kind of presented itself as kind of the champion of India's growth. And India's growth is Adani, and Adani's growth is India's growth from an economic perspective. It operates airports in India. It operates and owns coal power plants. It operates a very large port. I think kind of the normal way that companies respond to short sellers is usually to kind of question their motivations, because the short sellers stand to make a bunch of money by people not liking this company's stock anymore, or bonds, or whatever the case may be.
Right. Let's talk more about that. What is the role of the short seller here, in this case, Hindenburg? What can that company stand to gain from seeing Adani lose its reputation and perhaps investor confidence here.
Yeah, so what Hindenburg's business model is they find companies that they think are overvalued, and in Hindenburg's case, overvalued because an alleged fraud or accounting irregularities or, you know, something kind of that crosses more into the criminal than the like, oh, investors are just wrong about how much this company's worth. And so they find that, they do all this research, and then they publish that research. And before publishing that research, what they do is they position themselves in the markets to benefit if their research is kind of taken seriously by the market and the share prices go down. The interesting thing about this particular trade for Hindenburg is that they are not short in the shares in the stock. What they are short in are U.S. traded bonds and derivatives on those. So Hindenburg stands to win, make money off Adani's share prices going down. And that's not really a mystery. Like, that's something that Hindenburg discloses in its research. That's kind of what Hindenburg does. But companies do often usually kind of point to the motives of the short seller as a reason to disregard the veracity of their information.
Ben, this has also scuttled Adani's plans for a large share sale this week that aimed to raise more than $2 billion. Why did we see that abrupt turnaround, and what does it tell us about the state of the conglomerate right now?
So the company was going to raise, I think, about $2.4 billion worth of money through new shares, and a few things happened. One is the report came out and the shares cratered. So the range of prices that the company was going to sell those shares at was actually above what the shares were trading at on the market. Normally in an offering like this, you know, it'll go below, you know, you get the shares at a slight discount. And in this case, there's kind of, it's not very economically rational to buy shares at a price above what you can buy them for on the open market. So that was one thing that happened. Another was that some of the entities that Hindenburg focused on as being kind of these undisclosed related parties were involved in the share offering, or either as investors or running the book. So, you know, that was kind of pointed out as well. And then the actual kind of appetite for retail investors was pretty low. I mean, this question at its root is who's behind the entities that are buying and holding Adani's stock? And I think those questions were raised again in this offering. And the market did not seem super impressed with the answer. And so ultimately that offering was pulled. And again, the markets weren't super impressed with that either, because it sort of seemed like where there had been smoke, there might be fire.
What is the risk of contagion now in this spreading beyond Adani?
I think, you know, going back to something I said earlier, that Adani was, you know, kind of tied to India's growth and India's growth was tied to Adani. I think there's potentially a lot of knock-on effects in maybe Indian corporate governance or regulatory regimes, things like that. But outside of that, I mean, it doesn't seem to be spilling over. You know, there don't seem to be kind of really, really intense exposure that would kind of lead to something else that you might expect with a market capitalization losing, you know, $100 billion. That doesn't seem to be happening. It's still early days. I mean, I think one of the remarkable things about all this is it's just been very, very fast.
That's Wall Street Journal financial investigative reporter Ben Foldy. Ben, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
If you want more great reporting from Ben Foldy, check out the latest season of the Wall Street Journal podcast, Bad Bets, which focuses on the story of Nikola founder Trevor Milton, including the role that Hindenburg Research played in the company's downfall. Just search for Bad Bets in all the places you usually find podcasts. And finally, just yesterday, the U.S. Department of Energy proposed new conservation standards for certain appliances, including cooking tops. This latest proposal is reigniting the debate over gas and electric stoves, weeks after a Consumer Product Safety Commissioner floated the possibility of a national ban on gas stoves. That idea has since been shut down at the federal level, despite already existing local bans on gas stoves in new buildings in New York, Los Angeles, and other cities. But the burning question remains, what does the science say? When gas stove burners are lit, they emit nitrogen dioxide, which, according to doctors and environmental health scientists, can irritate the airways and lungs, especially for people already struggling with respiratory illnesses. And a peer-reviewed study in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health concluded that 13% of childhood asthma cases could be tied to gas stoves. Almost 4 in 10 U.S. households cook with gas. If yours is one of them, Wall Street Journal Your Health columnist Sumathi Reddy has this advice on how to avoid nitrogen dioxide-related health problems.
The main thing is having a hood and making sure that your hood is vented outdoors. The second thing that could be done is opening windows when you're cooking. And a third good thing would be if you have asthmatic people in the family, particularly children or people with COPD or other respiratory conditions, maybe have them in a different room or different level of your house when you're cooking.
So if you're in the market for a new stove, make sure you do thorough research on which appliance is a match for you. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.